Law 38. Think as you like, but behave like others. Judgment. If you make a show of going against the times, flaunting your unconventional ideas and unorthodox ways, people will think that you only want attention and that you look down upon them. They will find a way to punish you for making them feel inferior. It is far safer to blend in and nurture the common touch. Share your originality only with tolerant friends and those who are sure to appreciate your uniqueness. Transgression of the law. Around the year 478 BC, the city of Sparta sent an expedition to Persia led by the young Spartan nobleman Pausanias. The city-states of Greece had recently fought off a mighty invasion from Persia, and now Pausanias, along with allied ships from Athens, had orders to punish the invaders and win back the islands and coastal towns that the Persians had occupied. Both the Athenians and the Spartans had great respect for Pausanias. He had proven himself as a fearless warrior with a flair for the dramatic. With amazing speed, Pausanias and his troops took Cyprus, then moved on to the mainland of Asia Minor known as the Hellespont and captured Byzantium, modern-day Istanbul. Now, master of part of the Persian Empire, Pausanias began to show signs of behavior that went beyond his normal flamboyance. He appeared in public wearing pomade in his hair and flowing Persian robes and accompanied by a bodyguard of Egyptians. He held lavish banquets in which he sat in the Persian manner and demanded to be entertained. He stopped seeing his old friends, entered into communication with the Persian king Xerxes, and all in all affected the style and manner of a Persian dictator. Clearly, power and success had gone to Pausanias' head. His army, Athenians and Spartans alike, at first thought this is a passing fancy. He had always been a bit exaggerated in his gestures, but when he flaunted his disdain for the Greek simple way of life and insulted the common Greek soldier, they began to feel he had gone too far. Although there was no concrete evidence for this, rumor spread that he had gone over to the other side and that he dreamed of becoming a kind of Greek Xerxes. To quell the possibility of mutiny, the Spartans relieved Pausanias of his command and called him home. Pausanias, however, continued to dress in the Persian style, even in Sparta. After a few months, he independently hired a trireme and returned to the Hellespont, telling his compatriots he was going to continue the fight against the Persians. Actually, however, he had different plans. To make himself ruler of all Greece with the aid of Xerxes himself. The Spartans declared him a public enemy and sent a ship to capture him. Pausanias surrendered, certain that he could clear himself of the charges of treason. It did come out during the trial that during his reign as commander he had offended his fellow Greeks time and again, erecting monuments, for instance, in his own name, rather than those of the cities whose troops had fought alongside him, as was the custom. Yet Pausanias proved right. Despite the evidence of his numerous contacts with the enemy, the Spartans refused to imprison a man of such noble birth and let him go. Now thinking himself untouchable, Pausanias hired a messenger to take a letter to Xerxes, but the messenger instead took the letter to the Spartan authorities. These men wanted to find out more, so they had the messenger arrange to meet Pausanias in a temple where they could hide and listen behind a partition. What Pausanias said shocked them. They had never heard such contempt for their ways spoken so brazenly by one of their own, and they made arrangements for his immediate arrest. On his way home from the temple, Pausanias got word of what had happened. He ran to another temple to hide. But the authorities followed him there and placed sentries all around. Pausanias refused to surrender. Unwilling to forcibly remove him from the sacred temple, the authorities kept him trapped inside until he eventually died of starvation. Interpretation. At first glance, it might seem that Pausanias simply fell in love with another culture a phenomenon as old as time. Never comfortable with the asceticism of the Spartans, he found himself enthralled by the Persian love of luxury and sensual pleasure. He put on Persian robes and perfumes with a sense of deliverance from Greek discipline and simplicity. This is how it appears when people adopt a culture in which they were not raised. Often, however, there is also something else at play. People who flaunt their infatuation with a different culture are expressing a disdain and contempt for their own. They are using the outward appearance of the exotic to separate themselves from the common folk who unquestioningly follow the local customs and laws and to express their sense of superiority. Otherwise, they would act with more dignity, showing respect for those who do not share their desires. Indeed, their need to show their difference so dramatically often makes them disliked by the people whose beliefs they challenge, indirectly and subtly, perhaps, but offensively nonetheless. Cultures have norms that reflect centuries of shared beliefs and ideals. Do not expect to scoff at such things with impunity. You will be punished somehow, even if just through isolation, a position of real powerlessness. Many of us, like Pausanias, feel the siren call of the exotic, the foreign. Measure and moderate this desire. Flaunting your pleasure in alien ways of thinking and acting will reveal a different motive to demonstrate your superiority over your fellows. Keys to power. Wise and clever people learn early on that they can display conventional behavior and mouth conventional ideas without having to believe in them. The power these people gain from blending in is that of being left alone to have the thoughts they want to have and to express them to the people they want to express them to without suffering isolation or ostracism. Once they have established themselves in a position of power, they can try to convince a wider circle of the correctness of their ideas, perhaps working indirectly. Make a show of blending in, even going so far as to be the most zealous advocate of the prevailing orthodoxy. If you stick to conventional appearances in public, few will believe you think differently in private. Do not be so foolish as to imagine that in our own time the old orthodoxies are gone. Jonas Salk, for instance, thought science had gotten past politics and protocol, and so, in his search for a polio vaccine, he broke all the rules, going public with the discovery before showing it to the scientific community, taking credit for the vaccine without acknowledging the scientists who had paved the way, making himself a star. The public may have loved him, but scientists shunned him. His disrespect for his community's orthodoxies left him isolated, and he wasted years trying to heal the breach and struggling for funding and cooperation. The logical extension of this law is the invaluable ability to be all things to all people. When you go into society, leave behind your own ideas and values and put on the mask that is most appropriate for the group in which you find yourself. People will swallow the bait because it flatters them to believe that you share their ideas. They will not take you as a hypocrite if you are careful, for how can they accuse you of hypocrisy if you do not let them know exactly what you stand for? Nor will they see you as lacking in values. Of course you have values, the values you share with them while in their company.